Rosa.
It's now time for America's favorite radio program, the David Williams Radio Affliction. Now here's your host and modulator of the David Williams Radio Affliction, Peter Clay.
Well, hello and greetings and welcome to another edition of the Radio Affliction, lucky number 7. And by gosh, we've got practically a posse here today. Joining me here today, this is almost becoming a tradition, third time in a row now, my brother Adam Clay. Adam, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Good to hear from your voice. And then joining us first time on this program, but the man who showed us how to make and eat a raw beef sandwich, Jim Reed, is with us. Jim, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Pete. Glad to be here.
Oh, there he is. I thought he was like scared. I was like, oh, no. Oh, you were having a raw beef sandwich, weren't you?
If I had one, I'd be eating it.
Jim's like pausing.
Don't take that out of context.
No, no. I don't know how you can take a raw beef sandwich out of. Oh, I suppose you could. Never mind. Anyway, lots of things to talk about. This is lucky number 7 on the Radio Affliction, and glad you could join us. You can. This is an interactive program, and you can email us your thoughts, confusions, questions, and everything like that at radioaffliction@gmail.com. Plenty of things to talk about on this program. Adam, you and I, before Jim popped onto the call, we had some things to talk about. I think it's kind of, would you say ethics or something like that, or is it contradictions? What was the thing you were talking about to me the other day that you wanted to talk about?
Ethics, morals, beliefs. It all depends on what you believe in and how serious you are about it. And what happened with me was I work with a vegan, and he is very serious about it. No dairy, no cheese, no – I know dairy is cheese and cheese is dairy. But no animal product of any kind.
Okay, so no eggs or anything like that?
Soy milk drinking. He's diehard about this. He's very serious about this. He will not even have just a little crumble of cheese, nothing. He's also pale, and he gets sick every other week. But he's diehard about it, and he was approached by a very close friend of his that said, I will pay you $700 if you eat a porterhouse steak. Hmm. And he said he was going to take the money.
Interesting.
And I don't know how I feel about that. Now, what happens here is that because he's been a vegan for several years, eating a porterhouse steak would be a shock to his system. So before he eats the porterhouse steak, he's going to have like a beef jerky the day before, or he's going to have to eat a hamburger the, you know, 2 days before that.
So let him live on the edge, man. No, I mean, if he's hell bent on this, and you know, let him eat the thing and puke. I don't care.
Yeah, basically, but you know, I'm concerned about him because he's so diehard about his belief in veganism
that he's willing to give it up on a bribe. Yeah, he's real diehard.
And I told him, you know, eat the porterhouse steak when the money's on the table. Because this guy could renege, or, you know, he could just, you know, eat the steak and the guy could laugh at him and just say, ha, you fell for it. You ate the steak. Excuse me, you vegan.
And make the editor's job.
And, you know, but now he's, you know, I said, you know, when the money's on the table, eat the steak. And he said, yes, but I have to prepare my system for it first. So he could have a beef jerky the day before, and then he goes and sits down and he goes to eat the porterhouse steak.
But then,
and the guy doesn't have the money.
No.
So he's already broken his veganism, if veganism is even a word.
You just made one. You made up words last show, so why, you're just building a tradition here again. Yeah.
Veganism. Anyway, I just kind of think that he's prostituting himself.
He definitely is, and that's his issue. And I hope he enjoys it and becomes a carnivore. But But no,
here's a question that I have for you.
Yes,
is
sir.
That you know, I remember a few years back you were on the low carb, no carb Atkins diet.
Yeah.
And you broke your you kind of broke your Atkinism by eating tempura vegetables, because the batter that was on the tempura vegetables. And I was just wondering, now I understand you're eating pizza and you're eating, you know, all kinds of stuff. What broke your Atkinism?
Was
it just something that you
hungry.
Were doing with your girlfriend at the time?
Well, that too. I was hungry. And, you know, you would think it's easy. Oh, all you have to do is just eat meat without the bun and all that stuff. I guess the one thing that, you know, as far as addictions go, I mean, I get with my girlfriend now, I just get beat up on is just, I love pasta. It's like anything I can make and all that stuff. It's got to have pasta. Well, pasta is one of the bigger carby things that there is and stuff like that. So, you know, not all of us can eat raw beef sandwiches, you know, and just, but that's on bread though. How would you do that then? Try and eat a raw beef sandwich on a napkin.
Just eat a handful of raw meat, man. Or do the old, you know, do the old Nibs Miller routine. And for those of us out there that don't know what we're talking about, Norbert Miller was our grandfather, all three of us. And he used to grab a pinch of raw hamburger and sprinkle it with Lowry's seasoned salt and eat the damn thing like it was a morsel of tasty goodness.
It is
a morsel of tasty goodness if you're into eating raw beef. And, you know, Jim Reed has proved to us that.
Yeah. We're not getting to that.
You can eat a raw beef sandwich without the bread. So a raw beef sandwich can be a carb-free piece of tasty goodness.
there's our next little sketch there. How to have a raw beef sandwich on an Atkins diet.
Yeah.
Carb-free raw beef sandwich.
And to highlight, as I introduced Jim that way then, if on our webpage here, or if you do a Google search on it, it comes number one if you type in raw beef. I think if you do type in raw beef sandwich, it comes up number one. So you can check out Jim and see what he looks like there. And
yeah,
lives in California, but wears Wisconsin shirts all the time. But that's it.
I'd hate to see what number two looks like. I'm sorry.
That's right. Number two is what you get after you eat the raw beef sandwich.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's all good. And the Blatt's beer washes it down then too. That's the other thing with Jim Reed. What we're trying to do is we're trying to bring it.
No. The Blatt's beer is just a. The Blatt's beer is just a part of the ritual. It's not to wash it down.
I stand corrected. That's part of the recipe. But for Jim, we're trying to bring a coalition together to bring Blatt's beer back to California. Because we looked it up, and since Safeway bought out Lucky, that has ceased production in California. So we got to bring a petition together and all that stuff. So, speaking of moral compass, to get back to your point there, Adam, is that, you know, you just set yourself up for hypocrisy right off the bat, and which is fine. We all are hypocrites. We all do one thing and say another. We just don't readily admit it like I just did. and so when you set yourself up for something like that, you've just set yourself up right then and there to lie or set yourself up for something like that. Now, I have a moral issue, not a moral issue, an ethical issue that I witnessed the other day. My office is right next to a nationwide movie rental chain, okay? So they have lots of movies that are blockbusters, okay? And so one of the things there is it's very popular of that is the fast, quick drop-off right in front of the store. Don't have to go in, just drop it off. So being here in Wisconsin, if you haven't heard this winter or anything like that, we've gotten maybe a couple of inches of snow. So this lady comes up, and the driveway is just a mess from all the snow, and there's ice everywhere. And so all the parking spots are kind of filled up right up in front then. So she just stops right in the middle of the parking lot where everyone else is driving and runs out and drops her movie. And I'm thinking, okay, what's the moral or ethical? I don't want to put morals on this. Ethical thing here is to do that, or no one's using the handicapped part, disabled part. Why wouldn't you just run in there real quick? Maybe even turn your hazards on. So that was the issue when I brought this up to a little group was, oh, no,
hey,
you should
girls,
stay in the parking lot
guys
there,
look
but
for.
Put your hazards
Silly
on.
Silly young teeny boppers or older women?
Or what I
yes,
thought
that's right.
would be
today's real men look towards the older woman. But now, no matter how young you are,
or
you can
least,
start looking
you know,
older immediately with the latest wrinkle in teenage
run into
cosmetics.
The, just Ms. park wrinkles, real quick, leave the engine running,
in the morning,
maybe even put the hazards on
short
in the...
Minutes, tiny lines of character
disabled.
And maturity start to appear around
and
your
eyes. It's funny that you bring this up,
saying,
because last night the exact
when I brought
same
it up,
thing.
Just to finish it up,
most
though,
of all,
when I brought
I
this
know
up
what
to
I want.
They're
of
like,
course,
oh,
different
no.
faces say different
no, no,
things.
Never
not everybody
go
sounds like Peter Clay,
you know,
so we can't
so
be
I'm
responsible for what yours says.
Block.
So don't ask anyone's permission.
You're
grown up right now. Go out and buy Ms. Wrinkles.
Like three people behind you, but at least put your hazards on is the thing. That was the most ethical thing to do, but never, ever... going to disable, and I'm like, okay, maybe peak Clay insensitive moment here, but just run into that disabled to use something that nobody's using, even though somebody might be using it. You got the engine running, you got the hazards on, you're just dropping off the movies and then running out and leaving, you know, and then so that was my issue, is that to block something what everyone is using, and you're now piling up two cars behind you. Oh, sorry. Okay.
Instead of taking the risk yeah. of blocking one disabled
that
person's
nobody is using, yes. Yeah.
who may not ever show up.
Yeah.
You know, yes, last night.
We're talking about
I
ethics here, and so I'm talking about the most ethical in an unethical situation that was the least unethical thing that I could think of. But I apparently, so I just want to put that out into the sphere here.
Last night,
yes, sir.
I went to rent a movie, okay? And in the parking lot of the place that I was at, it's a strip mall. And so all the parking spots are in a row, and everybody was filled up because everybody was going to the bar or they were going to the restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And the only spaces available were the handicapped or disabled persons'
parking
places.
And how many were there?
Two.
Okay, that's all right.
But nobody else was coming, and I figured I'm just going to go in. I know what movie I want to rent. I know exactly what I want to get. I'm just going to go in. I'm going to get out. I said, you know what? I'm going to park in the handicapped space. It's going to take me about 2 minutes. Rarely does a disabled person come into this parking space. And I went in. Now, here's a question of ethics.
Okay.
Here's you know, this is pretty deep. I parked in the handicapped space. I went inside. I got my movie. I set it down. I paid my money. And the woman behind the counter wants to have a conversation with me because I know and she knows me. And she starts chopping it up with me. And we start having this conversation. And she's taking the DVD out and she's polishing it before she gives it to me. And I said, you know, I'm sorry. I got to run. I'm in a handicapped space right now. And she said, well, that's okay. Just stand here and talk to me and then walk out the door with a limp.
Oh. Now, okay. And is this what we would consider flirting here too, by the way, or is this a different situation here?
This is a different situation. Okay. This is somebody that – this is the wife of somebody that
okay.
I've worked for.
Need to say no.
There's no attraction or anything, but she's also – she's a socialite.
Uh-huh.
And she likes to talk with me. And she likes to have a good conversation. She loves good conversation.
Sure.
And, of course, you know, when her and I get together, there have been times where I've walked in there for a movie and I've left like an hour later without a movie because the conversation was so good and my movie wasn't there. We just stood there and we talked. And, you know, I let her know that, you know, I got to run because I'm in a handicapped parking space right now. And she said, oh, just walk out with a limp. And, you know, if an officer is giving you a ticket, just say you left your card at home and describe it to him. Just say, yeah, it's a little thing I hang on my rearview mirror. It's got a wheelchair on it. And, you know.
Well, no. And because so, you would, you know, this is where, you know, where the ethics is no problem for me on this one. This is that I would just say I'm really sorry, and if they would give you a hard time, then you just have to, you know, do the time on that. But you know, this was just a dropping a movie off 2 seconds type of thing. You know, I don't really think that there's anything wrong with what you did, but then you get caught up in the thing, and that's where it can be a problem then. And then, you know, 2 seconds then becomes 20 minutes then. And then, you never know, you know. Where did the term strip mall come from anyway? Does it make you wonder a little bit?
No.
Okay. Good.
Because it's a strip.
Oh.
And it's a mall. And that's all there is to it.
I guess they're all there is to that then, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, it's not like anybody's taking their clothes off, right?
I was not kind of, no.
It's a mall that you go to where everybody's naked. It's a strip mall. Yeah. No.
Well, here's a little something that came up on the news here, too, then. I guess ethics is involved. I guess this would be more moral issue. I just didn't like some of the quotes on there. This came up from CBSNews.com. Vermont is... putting up there's a movement to consider lowering the drinking age, and you know I made it to 21, but you know legally, you know, but to say that I wasn't drinking when I was 19, 20 though is, you know, so when someone says that this is a dangerous and irresponsible idea, I don't know about that. If depending what the circumstances are.
What I'm trying to figure out is why Vermont is proposing such a proposition. Is it because they're down on alcohol sales right now and that they need to, you know, boost it up so we'll get the younger people to buy alcohol? Or is it because... is it because they're thinking that younger people are drinking now, we might as well lower it anyway?
And kind of control it a little bit and put a, you know. Yeah.
So there won't be so many, because, you know, like you said, you were drinking when you were 19, and so was I. And this is the
well,
thing
not to
really
call out the old man
in
the group here, but Jim, your drinking age was 18, wasn't it, when you were...
It was 19 when I, the legal age was 19 in Illinois, and it stayed that way for a year, and then they raised it to 21.
Sure, and then they grandfathered everyone else in, though, too, I think.
You were great for about a year, and then all of a sudden you were screwed.
No, he would have been grandfathered in himself.
Yeah.
But any 18-year-old or someone.
No.
You weren't grandfathered in? Because that's what they did here in Wisconsin. But then again, we're cool here. Yeah, so I don't know how I feel about that situation. It's something that I know they're doing anyway, and
well, that's
does that make it okay?
That I'd like to clarify real quick.
Yes,
something I'd like to understand a little bit better, real quick, with Jim, is that the drinking age was 19, and so you were 19, and you were able to drink legally, and then all of a sudden they raised it to 21. So then were you unable to drink? You were able to drink for a second, and then all of a sudden you were not able to drink. Is that correct?
Correct.
That's just plain stupid.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what he said.
So it's just like, you know, one second, it's like, yeah, hey, okay, I'm going to drink up. All right, this is great. And then all of a sudden it's like, no, you can't drink anymore.
No,
not for another year. Half
that it would have had to have caused a major thing, because if it's like 24 hours before this is enacted, wouldn't you have just one barn burning party? that opens that's the kind of things I'm talking about, that's what causes problems then, you know. So and then that's just a thing, someone's 21st birthday is
that old. Was Illinois though, so everybody's a fib.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. We talked about that in the last show. Just the worst drivers in the whole wide world. I mean, it's hard to say that because you guys drive in California, which is not pleasant either. But I still can't figure out the, I'm going to get right on your tail, and if you don't move, you know, like I'm somehow obligated to someone else's life. There's like I have to move over. Oh, please, yes. What was I thinking? Yes, please move along. Yes, because well, I mean, after a while, I have to because I don't want someone 2 inches from my rear. But anyway.
The worst happens here in Monterey County is when somebody speeds up behind you, passes you, gets in front of you.
And then turns and then left or something like that.
Yeah. No, they slow down. Yeah. And it's just like, why did you cut in front of me and then slow down? Yeah. I don't understand. But yeah. Everybody here in Monterey County drives.
The problem we have here is...
What's that?
Sorry, go ahead, Adam.
No, I was done.
I cut you off.
That's all right.
The problem we have here in this area are the... the on-ramps are very short.
Yeah.
And so you've got to just pretty much nail it to get up to speed by the time you're dumped onto the freeway. And I've seen it so many times. And you just go insane. I was behind this guy. He gets up to the top of the on-ramp. He's not going fast enough. And he stops.
Mm. Yeah, that's always a good thought.
He just stops
all the things
and waits
to consider.
For traffic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of treating it like a yield sign or something.
Just,
yeah,
but yeah, which it isn't.
Right, exactly. No, you keep moving for whatever your sake. But yeah, that you know, it's hard to process what's going through it because I've been on that road that actually both of you technically are kind of live off of on, but yeah, the 101 is a weird road there, and the on ramps are rather exciting. But anyway, here's something kind of talk about. Well, you guys don't ever see this stuff, but I can vouch for the snow. But it's nice to know that I don't have to blame my weatherman for it. It turns out all the snow this year is coming from bacteria. There are microbes in the clouds that are forming and multiplying and getting together then and dumping a bunch of snow right on my house. This is from Scientific American. So, just remember, folks, when you get bad weather, don't...
I'm having trouble with that one.
I'm having trouble with that one, too, because I'm trying to understand if it's bacterial that's making it snow. What is this bacterial snow doing to the ground when it lands on it? That's you know...
Don't...
Is it going to eat your roof? Is it going to, you know, what?
Don't shoot the messenger here, okay? This comes from an international team of scientists... that have found microbes that float through the atmosphere and seed the formation of ice crystals and clouds, kind of like natural cloud seeding.
Now, that was something that I saw when I was a kid, and, you know, I might have been tripping because, you know, I was a kid at the time, but it was something that we watched on a videotape in my science class where this guy had a pot of boiling water, and it was making steam, and he filled up his room with steam. And then he dropped a crystal of dry ice into the steam, and yes. It made it snow.
Yes. That's typical cloud seeding. That's what you – the trouble with that, it's kind of hard to direct it where it's going to end up. They were thinking about doing that in the mountains of Colorado. They were testing that, and then they would get a phone call from Nebraska saying, hi, all that snow you were trying to make, yeah, we got it.
Yeah. Didn't land on your mountain, but it landed on us.
Yeah, so the
a lot.
There were some issues with that, but yeah, that's typically carbon dioxide and different things that are typically used in seeding clouds.
Well, see, that's the thing that's kind of scary. That's the thing that's kind of scary is that you know there was a problem with doing that, and now they're saying that bacteria. Is causing snowfall. So, you know, let's make sure that we don't get a bunch of scientists saying, okay, so if we want to snow over the mountains in Colorado, let's drop some bacteria in the clouds and see if it snows over the mountains so everybody can ski and have a good time. And then next thing you know, somebody
well,
in Utah...
Well, it wasn't about that, though. This,
as a, you know...
Didn't,
what's that?
Didn't mean to interrupt you there, but no, the issue on that is more for drought. The mountain snow is used more for filling the reservoirs than it is for skiing. Ski resorts make their own snow much easier on their own.
That's true.
But yeah, no, that's, you know, Colorado for years have just always have this weird system of, okay, we live in desert, but let's try and grow grass. Okay. and so you would always have these, you know, strange little things like, oh, it's Wednesday with a, you know, day with a four in it, so you can water today for 2 hours, you know, between these hours type of thing, and this revolving type of thing, or you'd have to do a lottery. Oh, this neighborhood can water this week and type of thing. So that's what what they were trying to do with that. Anyway, so yes, all the snow this year, microbes, and it's not global warming.
It's not global warming. It's a bacterial infection.
It hasn't been just here though. Baghdad, Iraq, saw its first snow ever since they've been keeping records, which only started about 4 years ago. And then China has had their coldest winter in 100 years. They had snow. It kind of ruined the Chinese New Year celebrations that they were going to have and all that stuff. And it is, after all, the Year of the Rat. That's the most famous one of them all, isn't it? Anyway, another topic that I wanted to talk about, since we had Jim here, and Jim and I have been talking about this for years, or even with you, Adam, because you have a bunch of stuff. You used eBay to try and sell stuff. You know, you got an excess amount of stuff. A couple of little things that have caused a little bit of controversy. Raising their fees, and in kind of a sneaky little way, by kind of taking out the listing fees, but then taking more of a percentage of your earnings, let's say. I almost said winnings. I'm not quite sure if that's correct or not. And the other thing was the taking away of the rating system, you know, whether you were – or feedback. And I just wanted to – you know, has anyone used eBay in a while? I really haven't in a while. Is eBay even still relevant these days? Jim, I'll start with you on that one. Were you having a raw beef sandwich again?
Hang on 1 second.
Sure. Adam, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, as far as the rating system is concerned, I am okay with them getting rid of that, because it seemed that there were people that were so obsessed with getting their ratings.
Yeah.
And I didn't understand what the – I mean, I understand that you get a good rating, you get good feedback. That is a good note to the next person that wants to buy from you, that, you know, you get good ratings. So, you know, you're getting a quality product from me. If you buy from me, you know, my rating is 4. So, you know, buy from me. But then it was like, you know, where's my feedback?
Right.
I purchased something online off eBay, and I was happy with the product when I got it. And then I checked my email, or I went back to eBay. I can't remember how it worked exactly, because this was about 4 or 5 years ago. But this guy was so obsessed with getting my feedback that it was almost like he was stalking me. It was just like, where's my feedback?
Right.
You know, sure to give me my feedback. It was disturbing.
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword on that, because, you know, like for myself then, who has, you know, 1,000 feedbacks or so, 99.9%, you know, it gave that assurance. Oh, here's a guy I can buy from. You know, here's someone who, you know. I understand that. I understand what you're saying. There was the whole idea then, if, you know, someone did send you a negative feedback, all they would do is just turn around and send you a negative feedback. So there's redundancies, and it was in an accurate setting and all that stuff. But how else can you, if there's no feedback, then how is that the better answer? Then how do you understand? How will you know if this is a reputable person to buy from? How do you know? You know, it's kind of unfair when someone's just getting started out and they don't have a rating.
Now, here's the problem that I have.
Yeah.
And again, I don't have an answer.
Mm-hmm.
But my only conclusion, my only inkling in this matter, is that the volume of sales in eBay has gotten so high that they're doing away with the feedback system, because there's just too much volume happening. There's just too many sales happening. There's too much happening that the feedback is just taking up web space. And so, you know, they just have to eradicate the feedback system because there's just plain too much happening.
Well, that could be one thing to say that, hey, if there's enough things to worry about, you know, why worry about something that's just, you know, redundant? Does it really tell you anything about it? You know, yeah, I mean, I got one negative review because I sold someone a CD and, oh, no, the insert had, you know, a little water. The CD was fine, everything like that. You know, and so so much of this, too, is people buying to resell type of thing, too. So that's what that was a tip-off to me. I felt like, you know, sending a negative feedback, too. So it's like, dude, you bought a 99-cent CD. Did you expect it to be, you know, pristine?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the thing. Hey, I'm going to get a 99-cent CD and sell it for, you know, $2, you know, or something like that or something. I don't know. So that was the issue that I had with it, but... one of the issues then too, then how do you, it's so set up now, I think, for more of this buy it now than it is, for an auction. And that's why I was to say, does anyone use this anymore? Because I'm certainly not buying anything from there. I used it to sell stuff, you know, stuff that I just needed for, you know, a few minutes or just something I picked up somewhere, thought I could use it. No, can't. So I at this point, I almost would rather... if I pick something up at a secondhand store, usually that's a charitable organization, I'd just be tempted to donate to another place then and take the tax deduction then to try and make up the dollar and a half that I might have spent, you know.
Well, I don't have an opinion on that matter. All I know is that I've used eBay to, and eBay is just a godsend of finding something that is just, you know, in the catacombs of your mind. It's
sure.
Like a cartoon called The Mighty Orbots from 1985. I was on a nostalgia trip. I wanted to get, you know, Mighty Orbots. I typed in Mighty Orbots, and next thing you know, there it was for sale on eBay for $9.95. And I bought it, and I received it, and I gave the guy a good rating because I got it and everything. As far as selling on eBay, that's where I've had a problem because I never fully understood why you would sell something. You want to sell something for $5, but on eBay you have to put it on for $4.99 because otherwise they're going to charge you for that extra dollar.
Well, that's
just
extra
that
penny.
1 cent.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're going to charge you for that one extra cent, and I never fully understood that. I've sold some things on eBay. I've made some money on eBay. What's really disturbing to me, as far as hassle is concerned, is the shipping and handling. Because you could buy something on eBay for 99 cents, but it could cost you $3 in shipping.
Or 10. You're actually paying for the shipping. That was the big trick on that, is like, you know, try and sell cheap, but make it up on the shipping end, because
right.
I don't think they take fees from that. Then I think that was the reason.
Exactly,
behind that,
and so were, you know, me as a seller, when I had a set of speakers that I wanted to sell, top of the line quality product, I paid $200 for them. I put them on eBay for $50, and then it asked for the shipping and handling. And I didn't know what to do. And what do you do? Here's a question of ethics. Do you take it to your UPS store and have them weigh it and find out how much the shipping and handling is actually going to be? Do you do that ethically? Or do you say, okay, the speakers are $50. I pay $200 for them. I'm going to say the shipping and handling is going to be $50. Just pull it out of my butt, you know? You know,
and then it turns out that it actually costs $75 to ship, though, too. That's the thing.
And then you're screwed.
Well, there's ways around it. If you were going to do this, you know, professionally, you know, I at one point picked up a little postal scale, and then, you know, the post office has a website now. UPS has a website then, and you would just, you know. You would find approximate, you know, so with UPS, you have to, you know, where's the furthest place you could send this to me? All right, say California then. So even if I'm shipping it to New York, I'll just, you know, It would normally cost $25 to ship this then, so that's what my shipping charge is then. The, you know, how much it costs for the box, okay, maybe $5, I don't know. And then that packaging tape, there you go, packaging tape, that's expensive stuff. You know, so that, you know.
Then you also run into the, you run into the problem where are you going to be shipping it to? You know, am I going to be shipping it to somebody? I actually had this happen, where somebody was buying my speakers in Southern California, and I'm here in Monterey. And so he looked at the cost of the shipping and handling, and he said, hey, dude, you're charging $25 for the shipping and handling. That would be great for somebody in New York, but I'm right here in California. Why is it going to cost me $25 to ship it in California when, you know...
That's the option that the person has then. Do they want to pay that $25 of shipping, or do they want to try and find it somewhere else? Here's exactly what they're looking for. So that's on them then. You know, you can overthink this a little bit too. So I think that's where a lot of the, you know, the issues with most people from eBay come in, is this mindset, that it's too difficult and all that stuff, where it takes a little bit of practice. It's something you'd want to do right. You don't want to screw it up. But now, do you have that out now if there's no feedback? You know, if there's no, you know, but you just want to protect yourself and wonder that you're, you know, you want to sell this, but you actually, they're going to give you $25, but it costs you $50 to ship it. So you actually, it actually costs you money to try and get rid of something when you could have just, for that, I could have donated it to Goodwill and gotten a tax break on it then, you know. So that's why it takes a little bit of research, but, and a little bit of time. That's the main reason why I haven't eBayed in a while. Jim, are you still there? Have you eBayed in a while?
No, I'm still here. Most of it has been, you know, purchasing. Not a whole lot of selling. But, you know, the feedback stuff is kind of interesting. I guess I don't care if they've got a real good positive feedback, as long as they don't have a real bad negative feedback.
Sure.
So, because if you look at feedbacks, you know, everything's like, oh yeah, A+, textbook transaction, no hassles, great to deal business with. Well, right. That, you know.
That doesn't help me, yeah.
You just make that stuff up.
Yeah.
It doesn't help, but... You know, when you see one that's, you know, a red flag that's a negative, it's like, you know, took 6 months to get my part, or, you know, was a jerk about shipping. Now, that's stuff that's kind of useful, and it's hard to – it'd be nice if you could filter that out right away. So let's say you've got your guy that's, you know, he's a power seller. He's got 24,000 transactions, and he's a 99.7% positive feedback.
Sure.
I don't care about that. I want to see his negatives, and I want to see them easily. And I don't want to have to scroll through 24,000 transactions to find it. And I don't think there's an easy way right now to do that. I just want to see negatives, not good.
Well, guys, if things like StumbleUpon can help you figure out what the, you know, their thumbs up and thumbs down, I think you can do it. No, I agree with you to a degree. You know, when someone has 24,000 sales, which a lot of people have more than that even, obviously, are each one of them going to be picture perfect?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the thing. Something's bound to go wrong. And who's to say what someone else's expectation of how a sale is supposed to go to then? You know, you go through 24,000. Why am I busting my butt for this one guy who, you know, and then, oh my gosh, if I don't leave a feedback, I guess the one thing that Adam was talking about there too was I'd never understand why I was sending feedback for someone for paying me. All right, it's like one thing for them to send me feedback because they bought from me, but all they did was pay me, you know. And if they didn't pay me, well, I wouldn't have sent it then. So that just would, you know, I would have canceled the sale. You know, the reason to leave a feedback on that, say, don't let this person buy from you because they, you know, don't buy from you. It's like, well, screw it, you know. So that's one thing I can understand why, and then why someone needed that feedback right away just to say. And all I would ever say is, thank you. Thank you. You paid me. What else am I supposed to say?
Yeah.
You know, oh, great buyer. That person pays money. Hey, I was really hoping they were going to pay me in, you know, old silver tin coins, you know, or something. I don't know. But, you know, that's my thoughts on that.
I don't really care. You know, if I sell something or buy something, if nobody leaves feedback, then that doesn't bother me. I don't you know, hunt them down or anything.
Yeah. But like you said, though, if, you know, what is the reasoning for these? Was it because they didn't send the right thing or, I mean, you know, these are things that can happen, too, though, you know. I mean, I guess the one thing is that if we're just trying to sort out fraud, those are pretty easy things to figure out. All you'd have to do is really say to eBay, say, yeah, something isn't right here. You know, I mean, the one thing that I did buy, but I knew it because they tried taking this person down three times. But I wanted, darn it all anyway, the animated version of Gilligan's Island. And there's just no... you know, legal way of doing it. It's never been released on in DVD, you know? So this person was just DVRing him from, you know, his TV and then putting him on DVD and selling him. And I said, oh, that's what I wanted. And so, but, you know, granted, we're really getting into ethical situations here. But I at least knew, and then the person delivered. Yeah. So it was no problem with me, but obviously that's not right. And that had to be taken down. But this is, you know, I'm just glad they did that after I got my DVDs.
Well, it's all part of the digital rights movement, you know.
Yeah. You know, Adam was talking about something earlier about, you know, something as a kid. I could have sworn myself one time we were watching Batman one time and the computer went up and went, "Bat message."
You brought up something that was very interesting, though, is that I wanted to get the old cartoons Dungeons and Dragons off of eBay. And what I got was they were on DVD. But it looked like somebody had taken a video camera and filmed the TV screen of the cartoon. It was just the quality was so poor. Yes, it was on DVD, but the video quality was so poor that it was like they videotaped their TV screen. And there was even the little fox blurb in the bottom of the in the corner. So it was like I felt like I got ripped off.
Yeah. I knew that going into it. There was just no way.
You did.
Yeah, you did. And that's let the buyer beware on some of that stuff. that didn't bother me too much. But now you've got Dungeons & Dragons, because that's been released on DVD now, hasn't it?
That I do not know.
Oh.
I need to check. Oh. You actually sent me.
Anyway, FBI, everything's everything's good over here.
Yeah, didn't you hack that for me from never mind. I'm sorry.
Anyway, so we will move on.
Next topic.
How about those Packers anyway, huh?
yeah.
I actually. Oh,
about those raw beef sandwiches? All right.
Yeah. Yes, please check.
Love them.
That sounds good.
Yeah. I have an interesting issue. I went down a little bit memory lane here, and I don't know if there's something to that for where, you know, pick one that you guys can relate to, but I saw a concert from a group that I grew up. Listening to and all that stuff, and saw them in concert then, and was fascinated. Now they're coming up with a new album. The group Asia, all the original members, you know, it's been 25 years and stuff like that. The group has been around actually all this time, but in just different incarnations and all that stuff. But they put the band back together again. But then you need to wonder every now and then. But you know, music is, you know, the rock and roll is still relatively young compared to everything else in the universe and all that stuff. But boy, when do people need to kind of give it? It was a good concert. I enjoyed it. I had fun. But do I really need a new album and all that stuff? And when, you know, and Steve Howe just looks like he's dead and doesn't know it. Seeing some of these people in their 60s doing rock and roll, I don't know. When do you need to give it up? But, you know, does it until it doesn't sound good anymore, I guess? I don't know. Does anyone have any opinions on that?
I've got an interesting opinion. I've been watching VH1 lately because they've been doing these, top 100 songs of the 90s and top 100 dirtiest songs of all time and so on and so forth. And when they were doing the top 100 songs of the 90s, they had been interviewing people who were on the list, Counting Crows. Adam Durowitz, is that his name? They were interviewing him, and he just looked like an old Jewish dude.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Well, back when his song was popular, he had those dreadlocks, and he, you know, shook his head, and everybody was just like, okay, he's really cool. And then, you know, you see him now, and he's still performing. He's shaved his dreadlocks off, so he's bald now. He just looks like this old Jewish dude whining. And then they interviewed Alanis Morissette.
Whining when they were popular, but...
Joan Osborne. She had that one hit, you know, What If God Was One of Us and everything like that. And, you know, it was a big hit. And she was a pop sensation for a second. And now she's just
okay,
this,
but now this. Magnify this here. Time, that's just like 10, 15 years ago. Multiply that, dude, times two.
Yeah.
I mean, I mean, Asia, they're talking about their 25th anniversary, but they were with groups before that then, you know, 10 years before that then. And these guys are getting back together. I mean, who would you want to see? Okay, the Eagles have gotten back together again. Pink Floyd did, you know, briefly for four songs, but did. I mean, who do we really need to... You know, did they come up with rockers? And I mean, when I'm not rocker, they are rockers. But you know what I mean? Canes or something. I don't know. But who's going to come up next now? I mean, Asia. That I didn't even think about it until they actually came back together again. But who's the next group that could come back together and go, whoa, dude? And then you kind of wonder why a little bit. But then you listen to it, and you go, I mean, Asia was kind of cool because you know they only. They performed their first album and a couple songs from the second album, but then also songs from Emerson.
Want to know what the worst case scenario was for me was In Excess, since Michael Hutchence died of autoerotic asphyxiation. They actually put out a reality TV show where they were trying to find the new lead singer of In Excess, and they actually chose one, and it sucked.
Sure.
There was no atmosphere. There was no mood. There was no. It didn't sound like the same band. There was no anything. So that's not just a matter of a band getting back together. That was a band trying to find the new voice. Something interesting else that came up was that Queen.
Yes.
Tried to get back together with a new lead singer.
No, they did.
And. Yeah, they did. And apparently, even Freddie Mercury, while he was alive, favored this singer that they have chosen. That was one of the reasons why they chose this new singer, was because Freddie Mercury was friends with him while, you know, Fred was alive. It still just didn't sound the same. It didn't have
that
the
feeling.
That
would seem weird to me. And, Jim, I don't know how you feel about this, too. I mean, no, it's Paul Rodgers, who was with Bad Company and Free and stuff like that. So is Queen as a rock band, it makes sense. It's a drastic contrast from Freddie Mercury, though. So, I mean, if you want to – I guess the way they're – the way they're promoting it is Queen with Paul Rodgers, and they're not just being Queen and stuff like that, because that – you know. But I guess I don't know where I was going with this. I mean, we've seen Led Zeppelin get back together for a thing. You know, there was a little bit of replacement issue there. You really can't do the Beatles anymore. So, I mean, I guess I'm struggling with this. I mean, who, you know, out of the, you know.
What's next?
Yeah. I guess it could, because it's embarrassing when I see these things on TV. You know what? that there you go. I think you got it, actually. Because they've been trying to do that for years now, too. I mean, that, again, would be a one night only. Who cares if they did a tour and then like that? But one night, all four of them get together.
Here's where I was kind of upset, but I did not vocalize my opinion, is that, you know, when I was working and, you know, we were doing our business, we were all stocking the shelves and everything. And then Take On Me from A-ha.
Yeah.
Came on the loudspeaker, and everybody was bobbing their heads, and everybody was just, you know, singing along, and everybody was having a good time. And then one person said, "Boy, talk about a one-hit wonder, huh?"
Yeah.
And they said, yeah, this is their only one song, right? Mm-hmm. Now, at the same job, a customer came up to me and Take on Me was on the loudspeaker. And he said, what's their other hit song? And I said, The Sun Always Shines on TV. And he said, very good. You're a child of the 80s. And I said, okay, here we go. All right.
Yeah.
And now everybody was talking about,
yeah,
you know,
could have named
them
Living Daylights, even if it wasn't a hit, that James Bond theme.
The Living Daylights, they did a James Bond theme song, you know.
That's a big deal.
But they are still playing before large audiences.
Oh, yeah.
In their home country.
Oh, all over.
They are still.
England, too. And they're...
Yeah. So it's just kind of like, you know, somebody's saying, you know, ABBA, well, you know, ABBA could probably still perform in Sweden if they wanted to. And maybe they are.
That's where Jim is more correct of the point that I was trying to get at, though, because there are these groups that, oh, you haven't heard them for a long time. But, you know, I mean, you brought up Joan Osborne. Joan Osborne's been touring for the longest time. She'll show up at Summerfest here and stuff like that. Peter Frampton has been going on for years and stuff like that. You know, Pink Floyd hasn't been together in 10 years, but 20-some years as a group type of thing. And ABBA, you know, it's been, you know, 27 years since they've done anything. So Jim gets a point there. Point for Jim. There you go. One more RB sandwich for you. Then all Asia, right. was another one too. I mean, I guess they, like I said, they haven't. So I mean, Yes has done stuff. So like, yeah, it's scary to think of what the next group would be, and it's one of those things where you won't think of it. But there you go. So. Gentlemen, I'm out of topics on this point. I thank you so much. Is there anything else that you guys want to bring up or ask me? Any questions, since we don't have email or anything like that? Anything you want to ask me, go ahead. I'm up for it.
Go for it, Jim.
If God's so powerful, can he make a rock so heavy he can't lift it?
Ah, good question. I'm glad you brought that up. See... The biggest thing on this thing is that I've learned.
What's
is,
the purpose of a cheese straightener?
There you go. Now, Jim, I'll go back onto that one and say you can't have energy without mass. Okay, so you know, so yeah, so there. One last thing, actually.
Here's a topic that I've been curious about, and that is the name Queen.
Yes.
For the rock band. Somebody
you're treading
told
a dangerous territory here.
Yeah, somebody was telling me a nasty rumor that the name Queen was because of Freddie Mercury's homosexuality. Is that true? Do you know? Why? But then, you know, then it also makes you wonder what made them name the group Queen. Well, but then, at the same time, then why did ABBA name their group ABBA? And why did, you know, Asia name their group Asia? You know, is Queen just a name that they just pulled out of nowhere and said, we're going to name the band Queen?
Yeah, they're British and Hail to the Queen and all that stuff, too. We'll just leave it at that.
Now, the other topic of curiosity was, let me see. Journey was a group that has tried to come back together several times, and now apparently they're back together without Steve Perry.
All right.
That could be old news on that too, because they had an album out in 2001 without Steve Perry and a tour and all that stuff, and it was that did
crap.
Really well. That's a harsh word. Poo poo. No.
I think if you try to bring a band back and you don't, if you don't have the lead singer, you're going to have a problem.
I mean, obviously there's certain situations.
You know, I don't think Van Halen wasn't the same after Sammy Hagar came on board. You know, Queen's not going to be the same with Paul Rogers. Is it still good music? Of course. And you're going to hear your favorite songs. They're just going to be a little bit different. But if you're expecting to just, you know, break out in Bohemian Rhapsody and have it sound just like Freddie, no way.
Sure. I mean, it's a karaoke song, though. Everyone else has sung it, though, too. So I guess, you know, different groups and different things. There's another one. I mean, the Doobie Brothers have been going out as the original band. You know, that was two different groups as well. You know, you just have your... Well, someone else has their opinion on that, too. you know, I don't want to say Van Halen was better or worse with Sammy Hagar. Van Halen was able to continue. You know, it was just a different direction and stuff like that, and it was a different dynamic. And so now that's the one thing I'll say. I don't care, I guess, at this point, who the lead singer of Van Halen is. If you don't have Michael Anthony in Van Halen, though, it's not Van Halen. I'm sorry. That's the one. You can kick out Sammy Hagar twice now, I guess. But, man, kicking out Michael Anthony, that's what did it in for me. And I watched the Sammy Hagar's concert then and Michael Anthony came on in the second act then for when they were starting to do Van Halen songs. And it just makes a big difference. It makes a big difference between Sammy Hagar's solo stuff. And then he starts doing the Van Halen stuff. And, you know, yes, it would be nice to have Eddie's guitar because he is a great guitarist. But, you know, the vocals were what made the deal too. And so anyway, so. I think we've taken up enough of people's time here. I hope you enjoyed the show. Comments, questions, concerns, anything like that, please email us, radioaffliction@gmail.com. Jim Reed, thank you so much. Enjoyed having you on, and I continue to enjoy raw beef sandwiches. I thank you for being on.
Yeah, we'll do it in person next week.
There you go. We'll have you here. Adam, as usual, thank you once again.
Of course.
We'll talk to you again real soon. And this has been Lucky Number 7 of the Radio Affliction. We'll see you next time. Thank you.